Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Monday, the 17th of May, 2021. I'm Joe Vicknicki with the local news. A new COVID-19 case announced in Petersburg Saturday evening. It's the fifth active case currently in town. Like the others, the new case is also travel-related. The person is a non-resident, arrived from out of town earlier last week and tested at Petersburg Airport. Positive test result returned Saturday, but by then the person was already in Juneau. They're isolating there and contact tracing underway. Current community risk level continues to be at low. A risk level at the school district low and the hospital's level is moderate. Weekly positivity rate at 1.6% with 46 tests pending as of today. Reminder that COVID testing free for all travelers at the Petersburg Airport and strongly recommended. Testing is required for anyone who's not fully vaccinated and arriving in Petersburg from out of state. There's free follow-up testing also recommended 5 to 14 days after arrival at the airport. Testing for people with symptoms is free at Petersburg Medical Center. The number to call, 772-5788. And the Emergency Operations Center is asking residents not to be complacent about COVID mitigation so that schools and businesses can stay open, which includes maintaining good masking and hand hygiene, proper social distancing, and avoidance of crowds. Legislators and others in the Capitol are no longer required to wear face masks to prevent the spread of COVID-19. The Legislative Council voted unanimously to replace the requirements with a more limited set of rules. Masks became optional, though there are exceptions if individual legislators require them for their offices. Soldotna Republican Senate President Peter Michicki was eager to address mask policy opponent Senator Laura Reinbold immediately after that vote.
If I may, Senator Reinbold, you can remove your mask now.
Lawmakers cited new Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidance for fully vaccinated people in making that change. The new policy covers everyone in the state capitol, including those who are unvaccinated. Policy change also dropped a requirement that unvaccinated people undergo weekly tests for the coronavirus. Those are now a recommendation. Legislature hasn't changed the rule that closed the Capitol to members of the public, however. The building has been limited to lawmakers, legislative aides, news reporters, and some state employees. Petersburg's Borough Assembly tonight will be voting on multiple issues that could wind up on the local ballot this fall. Tonight's meeting is the third and final vote on a ballot measure to remove Frederick Point East subdivision from the borough's Service Area 1. Property owners in the remote subdivision on Eastern Mitkoff have asked for a reduced property tax rate to reflect a lower level of services. Those landowners and voters in Service Area 1 will vote on that change in October if the Assembly gives its final approval tonight. Another vote is on the first reading of a ballot question for Assembly term limits. Assembly member Taylor Norheim asked for that to go before voters this fall. He's hoping to bring new faces to the governing body. As drafted, the ordinance would limit a person to two consecutive full terms as mayor or assembly member. Then they'd be eligible again after sitting out for a term. Also up for a vote at tonight's meeting, a resolution supporting the Petersburg Medical Center's efforts to pursue construction of a new facility using a phased approach. The resolution acknowledges the need for quality health care in the community and would support bringing the project to shovel-ready status. That would also mean the borough would provide the land for one of the three sites in consideration around Haugen Drive, the ball fields, and Mountain View Manor. The Assembly also has the second reading on the borough budget for the fiscal year that starts in July. That spending plan would keep the same property tax rate as this year and relies on surpluses from federal COVID-19 aid to help balance spending and revenue. Assembly members also will review answers provided by supporters of an effort to grant land from the Tongass National Forest to five new urban native corporations in Petersburg, Wrangell, Haines, Tenekee, and Ketchikan. Congressman Don Young has reintroduced a bill that would make that transfer for Alaska Natives in the five communities not granted urban or village status during the 1971 Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. There's also a discussion planned on remote docks in the borough, and the Assembly will hear an update from the Southeast Alaska Power Agency. The meeting is at 6 tonight, and KFSK will broadcast it live. And a reminder, people hoping to testify are now asked to register with the borough clerk at least an hour before the start of the meeting. You can call 772-5405 or email dthompson@petersburgak.gov. And KFSK News also will be talking with a couple assembly members here at around 12:30 on borough business. That's a radio call-in show, and our number here, 772-3808. Petersburg School District is hiring a school nurse to help with COVID next year. The start of the school will look a lot like this year with some similar protocols in place, but there is expected to be more testing opportunity for students, which could allow for more activities. KFSK's Angela Denning reports.
A lot could change at the Petersburg schools by fall. As with most things involving the pandemic, there's new guidance and recommendations all the time as scientists learn more about the virus.
We continue to adapt and adjust, you know, policies and procedures as things evolve with the pandemic.
That's Erica Kluepainter, superintendent of the Petersburg School District. She was speaking on KFSK's Campus Connection show for the month of May. Even with the changing world of science, she says the district has to make a plan for next year. And looking at things right now, much will remain the same come fall. The name of the game will still be keeping students in school in person.
We've been more fortunate than many districts because we've had most of our year, you know, in person. We've had a few, you know, disruptions and that sort of thing. But overall, you know, we've been in person more than most.
So, the plan is to keep mitigation measures and protocols in place, similar to this year, at least in the beginning. That will include masking and social distancing with some more relaxed measures for the youngest students.
We'll probably start with those protocols in place. We've made those plans to have smaller class sizes already. You know, we've got things in place for that. But we're also expanding some of the offerings. For example, the middle and high school, you know, we lock things down pretty tightly with our pods of kids this year over there. That's especially the middle school is more like the elementary in that sense. You know, they were able to be. And we are planning to bring back choir and, you know, put band back in the schedule. You know, so those things are already in the works as well.
The school district must come up with its updated Smart Start plan by June 23rd. It's a directive from the state's Department of Education and is tied to federal funding through the American Rescue Plan Act. The plan must include details of how the district will safely return to in-person schooling in the fall. In order to do that, the school district must have public input. They plan to seek written feedback as well as hold virtual meetings where parents can comment.
What they see with their own kids, you know, things that have gone well, things that they wish had gone better, just concerns that they have going into the school year. So I think it'll be a good process.
Even with a startup plan in place, many variables could change by the fall. Vaccinations are becoming more available to younger students, and Kluepainter says it's possible that that could impact how the school district runs, which is exciting.
You know, it's another factor that families can consider and that the districts may be considering as things go forward, you know, not as a requirement, but what does it mean to protocols in classrooms and, you know, protocols for travel and, you know, all of those kinds of things.
Another change will be more COVID testing, which, like vaccines, is also going to be more available. Kluepainter says the antigen testing that they've been relying on for sport competitions now might be available for other students in the schools. To that end, the district plans to use federal funding to employ a school nurse next year.
That will be great because I sometimes feel like I wear that hat a little bit this year, too, because there's a lot of confidentiality things related to, of course, to testing and if there's positive cases and that sort of thing. So, you know, we don't have a lot of people that have access to lists and all of that. So I'd be happy to have an actual medical professional, you know.
The district is already advertising for the position. The last day of school in Petersburg is May 27th. The first day of school in the fall is August 31st. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
One of the visitors for this year's Little Norway Festival here in Petersburg was Norway's honorary consul in Alaska, Lisa Christensen. She's visited here before during the festival, including several trips with Norway's ambassador to the U.S. Consuls like her are American citizens who work to further diplomatic and commercial ties between the U.S. and other countries. She stopped by KFSK on Friday, and I spoke with her about some fun facts about Norway and the 17th of May.
Here we are in Petersburg, Alaska, celebrating the heritage and culture of Norway. Mm-hmm. And so the history, of course, is that Norway gained independence from Sweden in 1814. And it actually didn't get full independence for 91 years later, which is a little fun little factoid. But the 17th of May is a celebration for children, just like it is here. And in Norway, you'll see parades and lots of the bunads, the costumes that we're all wearing. And those, for most people, is the most expensive piece of clothing that they have. It's, they even have insurance. You can get insurance for your bunad for the 17th of May in case somebody spills something on you, mm-hmm. which is, you know, something you don't see over here. And then, as I mentioned yesterday, that people eat a lot of hot dogs and ice cream. But another fun fact is that Norway is the largest consumer per capita of pizza. Norwegians love pizza.
Really?
You wouldn't have thought it. You would think it would be all fish and more fish and maybe moose. But pizza is they're the highest consumers of that. And another fun fact is they like ketchup on their pizza.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not sure why. If you ask a Norwegian, why do you put ketchup on the pizza? Their answer is, why wouldn't you put ketchup on your pizza? They just can't fathom that others would not put ketchup on their pizza.
Interesting. You mentioned the bunads. You've got one on. Could you talk a little bit about the region that's from? And
Sure. So this one is from Rogaland, which is where my father is from, Stavanger. My mother is actually from Bulda, which is in the north, above the Arctic Circle, right below the Arctic Circle, and my father's from the south. And so my sister wears one from where my mother is from, and I wear one from where my father is from. I lived in Oslo for a few years and worked for an oil company, and so my oldest son was born in Oslo, so he would wear an Oslo bunad. I guess I could wear that as well, but this is the one that I picked to recognize my father and the history on that side. And so, yeah, I've worn it for my children's baptisms. I've worn it at weddings, 17th of May, of course, when the King of Norway came. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how much use I've gotten out of this wonderful costume. But it took a year to make it. It's unbelievable the amount of time that goes into the embroidery on it. So first it's putting it together, and then it's embroidering everything. And it's quite the labor of love to make all the bunads.
Mm-hmm. And do people instantly recognize the different bunads? I mean, is it pretty well known, the different regions?
They are, yeah. People pretty much know. And there's, of course, ones that are more popular than others, mostly because of population, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people from the Stavanger area. There's a lot of people from Oslo area and from the north. There's kind of a north bunad. But then there's also small little region and variations. So there are a couple that are standouts that I guess aren't as recognizable. And then there's what they call the everyday bunad, the Hverdags bunad. And I've seen some of those around here too, which is, you know, it's not embroidered. It's not as intricate, but they're beautiful. And they come in different colors, blues and reds. And I really like seeing those Hverdags bunads.
Well, things you're looking forward to doing here during the festival here in Petersburg.
Well, I love meeting the people. Mm-hmm. There's so many wonderful people here, and seeing familiar faces and new faces. Yesterday with the unveiling of the murals on the Hammer and Wicken store, mm-hmm. wow, that was quite the tribute to some Norwegians who came here and established this business, and to see all the generations coming together and celebrating their ancestry, that's going to be a highlight. That was super. Next up is the Bunad Style Show, and so I'll go and join that just to meet some of the others and see where all the other Bunads here are from. It's always fun to see that. And then I'm hoping to get out on the water. Petersburg has the most amazing fjords, the mountains, and the water, and I've been dreaming of Dungeness crab for quite a while.
The ambassador couldn't make it this year, but hopefully in future years.
Right. So the ambassador was here last time. Ambassador Kåre Aas is now in Israel. Mm-hmm. We have a new ambassador, female. Her name is Anniken Krutnes, and she definitely wants to come. Her executive assistant is here this year again, mm-hmm. and she fell in love with Petersburg when she came with the former ambassador. And so she's going to go back and tell the ambassador that she has to come, that there's no choice. She has to come to Petersburg. So
good.
I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see her in the next year or two.
That's Norway's honorary consul in Alaska, Lisa Christensen. During last Thursday's festival pageant, she did read a message to the people of Petersburg from the Norwegian ambassador, Anniken Krutnes. And you can hear a recording of that on KFSK's website, along with this interview. We're online at kfsk.org. For local news, I'm Joe Vicnicki.